This is CBSI and the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're on our way to the moon with South Korea's lunar orbiter, Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. I completely forgot, Bob. What is Denuri and what is its mission? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Denuri is a South Korean lunar orbiter that was launched by SpaceX a little while ago. And it's on its way to the moon, and it's a test science probe by South Korea. It's kind of similar to the first Indian orbiter to go to the moon and the first orbiter sent to Mars by the United Arab Emirates. The purpose of the mission is to really provide training to the people in South Korea on how to do this. But nonetheless, it's a legitimate science spacecraft, and it was launched in an orbit that would take it a few months to get to the moon. This is in order to save fuel and to require a smaller spacecraft to save money. And so this past week, it completed a major course correction, and that fired its engines to adjust the path to the moon, basically raise the orbit so that orbit would eventually crisscross into the lunar's gravitational field. And when that happens, it will switch from an orbit around the Earth to an orbit around the moon. And then that'll happen around December 16th. And then they'll do five more orbital adjustments to bring that orbit down to the science orbit sometime in January. And at that point, they'll begin to do actual science research. The thing is, it successfully did its major course correction, so it's on its way. And this is the good news. There are some American instruments on this spacecraft, but they're also, most of the instruments are South Korean designed. And this is part of that country's effort to become a space exploring power, along with many other third world countries.
The brave little flying toaster, Ingenuity. There was some question about Ingenuity's health and sustaining its power pack on Mars through winter. But now, the 31st flight. Bob, I learned on the NASA site that they have a really cool manifest of all the flights and what they've achieved. Clearly Ingenuity has taken on a life of its own for NASA. What does the 31st flight plan and success look like, Bob?
Yes, they find, you know, we talked about this previously, how they were planning to do a very short flight. Well, they completed that flight since last time I was with you, John, and it did almost exactly what they wanted it to do. They had planned to fly at 319 feet to the west. It flew 318 feet to the west. It flew 319 feet. It was a foot off. It landed a foot away from where they wanted it to land. Does that sound bad? No, it's not a problem at all. In fact, that's within the range margin of error in almost all its flights. What's interesting here is that they've changed the goals of Ingenuity. They're trying to perfect very precision landing, flight and landing. And the reason they're doing this now is because it's a more useful engineering task for this helicopter. It really isn't designed to scout for Perseverance, so they've used it a little bit for that purpose. It really was designed as an engineering test vehicle for flying a helicopter on Mars. And since NASA and the European Space Agency are planning to use a helicopter on the sample return mission that will bring Perseverance's core samples back to Earth, why not use Ingenuity now to really hone and fine-tune the software that must be used by that future helicopter? Because that helicopter will have to land very precisely next to the samples, use a robot arm to grab them, and then fly back very precisely to the return vehicle, and then to be able to deposit those samples in the return vehicle. And so they need to get this refined very well, and so this was a flight to do that. Obviously, they're also going to try to keep the helicopter close to Perseverance for communications purposes, but it was a success, John.
And the success of the 31st flight, I recall, Bob, you mentioning that Ingenuity is to be at least defined differently than Perseverance from now on, and that this informs future missions. So Ingenuity is a bigger success than they anticipated. It reminds me of Opportunity and Spirit, how once they exceeded their original profile rovers. They changed the mission, adapted them, and they became famous. Can we imagine Ingenuity going on for as long as Spirit or Opportunity?
Well, that's a good question. It's hard to say. It was only designed to go for 30 days, do about five flights, test flights. It's now gone 31 flights, and it's gone for, what is it, more than half a year? More than that. More than a year. So it's how long it can go. It's really good, open window. It is surviving the winter, which was the big obstacle. If it gets through the winter, then its life expectancy could be quite extensive. And that's really exciting. It just, once again, demonstrates that down the road, helicopters are going to take flying vehicles are going to take a much greater part in the exploration of Mars.
All right, let's go explore Mars. Bob has a cool picture of a lava flow. Again, what are we demonstrating? That Mars was active, volcanically, tectonically active? How do we take from this lava flow, Bob?
Well, the research is Mars. There's a whole section of Mars that I call volcano country. It's a vast plain, several thousand miles across, that's nestled between all the big volcanoes on the planet. It's basically one hemisphere almost of the planet in the equatorial regions. And in this region, you've got this vast plain is almost all a lava field, and it's a lava field. It's a flood lava field, and there were multiple eruptions that cause those floodplains. And scientists have done research to try to track down the history of those flood events. And of course, it's difficult to do from orbit, so there's limits how much they can do. But one particular floodplain called Athabasca Valles floodplain is considered to be the youngest major flood eruption on Mars. It's thought to have occurred 600 million years ago. Note that all the volcanoes are thought to have taken place more than a billion years ago, running from anywhere to one to two billion years ago. But this was 600 million years ago, and what it did is in only a matter of a few weeks poured out enough lava to cover an area about the size of Great Britain. And I've got a map on Behind the Black that shows where it was on Mars, where they think that floodplain is. And I posted the map in conjunction with a really cool image that Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter took of an example of the flood flows from that flood event. And once again, you know, the low, weaker gravity on Mars causes things to function differently. Lava flows much faster on Mars than it does on Earth. You could have literally a river the length of the Columbia River formed from a single eruption that length. And so this is just an example of it. You see these interesting formations. It looks like a river, but it's a river of lava that then froze later on and has now shown some erosion since then. It's just very cool.
That gravity also plays a part in what you say. A computer model tells us how glaciers move on Mars. How so, Bob?
Yeah, this is the opposite of lava. Using the data they have about Mars and recognizing that we've now identified a lot of glaciers on Mars, some scientists did a computer model comparing how glaciers move on Earth in its gravity versus how they might move on Mars in its gravity. And they determined that the motion of glaciers on Mars will be slower, but they will not be static as had been thought. They will move. And in the process of moving, they will they'll erode the ground under them differently. Instead of scraping and scratching the surface underneath, the water at the base will do a better lubrication job to protect the soil underneath. But what will instead happen is that the slow motion of these glaciers will end up in valley networks, canyons that meander and resemble those that look to us like rivers. And so this is one more data point that's increasingly suggesting that a lot of the features on Mars that we've attributed to liquid water might actually be attributable to glacial activity. And this is still preliminary. I'm speculating a little bit, but this particular computer model once again lays out that possibility that we see on Mars, we think of rivers.
That would help that mystery, Bob, you've cited before. We can't imagine how there was ever liquid water on the surface of Mars. And what you're suggesting is perhaps there was not.
That's right. It existed at the pockets at the base of a glacier where it was somewhat protected and could be liquid for a period of time and allow the chemistry to occur. And once again, this is alien processes that we don't have experience with, so it's going to take a lot of work, but there has been work done suggesting it's possible, and this computer model only adds to that.
All right, I'm looking at a cool image that Bob identifies as a crater that has a glacier in it. Is that why it's so shape? Okay.
Yes. This actual 4 mile wide crater, it's called a Very Crater, has actually been known for a very long time, and it was one of the early craters where they discovered gullies flowing down the interior slopes. And that was a big early discovery on Mars, going back to the early orbiters, suggesting some form of flowing erosion process was going on Mars. And so they've been monitoring this crater for a long time. The material in its base is now very recognizable as glacial material that we see in a lot of other places. When it was first spotted, they weren't sure what it was because they hadn't enough data. Now that we have enough data. So what you got here is gullies flowing into the crater where there's a glacier. Now, they originally thought this glacier, the erosion in the middle of this crater might have been from a lake, a paleo lake that's gone, but we could be looking at evidence, once again, of glacial activity, cyclical glacial activity over eons. And once again, the glacial stuff at the base of this crater is just really strange looking. You were looking at a moraine, and you're looking at glacier material that's sublimating away, and then on the slopes, you see all these gullies that seem to flow down into the interior of the crater, and something has caused that erosion of those gullies, and they don't really know what it is. They think brine, but maybe not. We don't know.
It's a very strange shape, and again, gravity probably played a part in these odd patterns that we're seeing.
Yes, absolutely right.
I often forget, and I have to remind myself, when we see the pictures of the mesas, what do you call them, that they just in Jezero, climbing out of Jezero, or even Curiosity, where it looks like somebody's built an impossible cliffside with layers sticking out. It's the gravity that does all of this.
There are three components to Mars that are alien that we have to that aren't evident in the pictures, but are there. One, of course, is the gravity. It's one third that of a little more than one third of Earth. But there's also the temperature. It's routinely extremely cold. It's as cold as the coldest places on the Arctic routinely in the polar regions. And third, the atmosphere. It's very thin. It's very, very thin. And so those factors are always present in every picture and making it an alien place, but they're not visible in the pictures when you look at them. You got to remind yourself they're there.
All right, from the surface of Mars, a crater on the surface of Mars, we're going to Hawaii. The operations, the first light, and that's the technical term this astronomers love to use, for the Inouye Solar Telescope. This is Hawaii, Bob. Is it on the troubled Mauna Kea or someplace else?
No, Inouye Solar Telescope has been under construction for 25 years. That seems to be the typical length it takes a government-run project to get completed. It's the largest solar telescope that now exists. It's run by the National Science Foundation, who built it. They've gone past first light. They have now announced the inauguration of actual science observations by the Inouye Solar Telescope in Hawaii. It's on an island in Hawaii. It's not Mauna Kea. It's someplace else. Obviously, they had some difficulties with the Native Hawaiian population in building it, which is why the press release announcing this focuses less on science and more on woke politics and how we have to help diversity, which of course has nothing to do with doing astronomical research. It also is kind of absurd. They spent 25 years making this ground-based solar telescope, and in the interim, we've now launched several solar telescopes into orbit that take pictures 10,000 times better than anything Inouye can possibly do.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're Space Engineering next. I'm John Bashley.